No, wait, I don't have any exclusive Nexus Q information. Although,
yeah,
we do have a little bit of something. should we share that? We do have a little bit of something on Nexus Q.
Put it in. Okay, you're going for it.
Let's go for it. So this is very random, and we've never reported this, but we heard a long time ago. This was a while ago that apparently some of the people that were on the Nexus Q team, or were, I guess, kind of working on the Nexus Q before it was announced and then just not launched. Launched and then canceled immediately. Apparently, these people continued to work on a device that was very similar to the Nexus Q, but it was not similar to the Nexus Q in functionality. It was more similar to Nexus Q in terms of its physical appearance.
Yep.
And this device was apparently a Chrome OS desktop, or it would have been a first party Google Chrome OS. What do you call them? Chromebox,
Chromebit, Chromebox.
Yeah. So this would have been a first party Chromebox if it had launched. And it was apparently in the form factor of a Nexus Q.
Yeah.
And it was built by some of the same people that worked on the Nexus Q. So that's a little bit of a Nexus Q. We actually do. There you go. That's our Nexus Q scoop. We have a Nexus Q scoop for the show.
The design. Some people are still obviously fond of the design within Google, but they of course never went with it. And in this day and age, it just wouldn't match with anything made by Google is doing, unfortunately.
No, not at all. But it is interesting. It's always interesting to hear about all these products that Google works on that never see the light of day.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Like, what was it? Another one was the original Google Pixel 2 XL. That would be like a prized possession to have, the HTC who made Google Pixel 2 XL. Which ended up being launched as the HTC something or other. But it was, if you remember correctly, there were three Pixel 2s prototypes. And two of them were made by HTC and one of them was made by LG. And so the HTC one got canceled. That's another one of those things. It's like it was an internal prototyped Google product that could have become something that was available to the masses, but got canned.
Yeah.
So,
but
plenty of those things to talk about.
Yeah.
Anyways, we should probably talk about Android 10, which that's the big story of this week. Android 10 is out and available on a bunch of, all Pixel devices. So RIP Nexus,
but go for the
for real this time. We've been saying RIP Nexus for a year.
Yeah, but yeah, so except the 2016 Pixel got one more year, which everybody is very happy about. Good for them for giving it one more major update and presumably another year of security patches and that sort of thing. So it still works. You can still use that phone, as there have been many deals, very cheap deals in that phone in the past few months even.
Yeah, so with Android 10, there's probably three main features, I would say. Mm-hmm. There's the gesture navigation, which is, I think, the most obvious user-facing change that people will notice immediately when they load up Android 10 on their phone. There's dark theme, and there's, I guess, everything else, which I guess the more important or notable things are smart reply built in to messaging notifications privacy changes.
Smart replies are small, but it's a big usability feature because Android has always allowed developers to build smart reply. But when you put it in the notifications for everything, people use it.
Sure. Well, let's talk about all of these and let's go in that order. So let's first talk about gesture navigation, which we've been talking about that on the show for a while. And it hasn't really changed. This is my main takeaway, is that every time we have talked about it, my kind of hope was that next time we talk about it, it would be different. And I've been saying that since the first beta, pretty much. And unfortunately, here we are in early September, and my Pixel 3 XL has Android 10 on it, and GestureNav is pretty much just as bad as it was the day it came.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you think about it?
So what I've ended up doing is, so on my big phone, on the Pixel 2 XL that I still use, I'm using gesture navigation, but on my actual daily driver, the Pixel 3, I'm sticking to the two-button navigation. Because
the pill.
The pill, because Android 10 fixes the biggest issue with it, which is when you swipe, when you use the swipe gesture to go back, your recent apps are organized chronologically versus being only being able to switch between your absolute last app. So this is something that Google should have done ages ago. And maybe if they did this last year with a point release, people would be more fond of the pill, of the pill navigation, which I think is now one year later is very refined and works great.
Yeah, I mean, it works. I agree with you there. I just think that it doesn't make sense as the long-term plan. I think that, I don't know. It's hard to analyze the user experience intricacies of this, because I'm just not a user experience expert. All I know is what I like, really. I mean, that's all I know. And what I like is, and what I've found that I like the most is the iOS gesture navigation system, which is, in my opinion, very refined and has been the same since the day that the day that Apple pulled the trigger on it, alongside the iPhone X. It is literally the same. It hasn't changed because it was that solid from the start. And there were some little things that took a little while to get used to, but overall, it's just a very fluid and user-friendly experience. And to me, I hate to say it, but to me, the full gesture navigation in Android 10 is very much a clone and a worse clone. It is the worst of I feel like when Google copies Apple or does the same things that Apple's doing, sometimes that goes really well. I think that sometimes there are genuine things that they can learn from Apple and implement in their products that Apple has done, and they shouldn't be ashamed. I think Mark Zuckerberg was famous for telling the Instagram team, don't be ashamed to copy Snapchat whenever they're doing things that are innovative and smart. And it, obviously that went really well for Instagram because now Snapchat is growing in irrelevance. But I think with this, it's the worst of that showing. I think that this is really, they have built something that is functionally similar, but functionally not elegant in comparison.
There's no elegance to it.
And it really comes down to the way the back button has been so integral to the way Android works since day one, and the way that they can't just move away from that. If they could just ditch that and they could just, you know, force developers to design their apps in a way that assumes that this whole back-based navigation doesn't exist, and that was the assumption, then I think this would make more sense. But my biggest problem from a usability standpoint, in using it on daily basis and just experimenting with it, is the biggest thing I run into is places where I should be pressing the back button, or Android, previous versions of Android would have me press the back button to go back. For instance, let me give you an example. Whenever you open the settings app and you go to check for an update, right? The update service in Android is actually a separate APK from the settings app, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so when you open that, it opens kind of in a window on top of the settings app, right? And that's one of those situations where there's no back button in the top left of the screen. So this is one of those situations where to go back from the system update window to the about page on the settings app, you would tap the back button. That's what you would do in pill navigation. That's what you would have done in the old three button navigation. And now what you have to do is you just have to intuitively know that you should swipe from the left side of the screen to go back. And I don't think that that's intuitive at all. And I think it's very confusing and it feels very unnatural to me. Maybe there's a level of getting used to it, but I don't think that's the case because it's even Google itself admits that this conflicts with other user experience paradigms. It conflicts. It just does with the hamburger menu situation and all this stuff. It just conflicts with so many assumed paradigms of Android navigation that it just doesn't make sense right now. So that's my take on it. I think that the pill, as much as I like, this makes me cringe deep inside to say this, but I think that the pill navigation is better as of today. That most people would be better off using the pill navigation or the three button navigation than the gesture navigation or the fully gestural navigation.
I think that's a win in my book, but yeah, but. My biggest point of critique on when Google introduced this gestural navigation system is always that it didn't seem like an original idea. I think over the past few months, over the beta period, I've kind of toned that down in that I think Google did come up with something unique / interesting by having the back gesture on both edges of the phone. Now, I should give them credit for that, but at the same time, it's a good idea if everything else worked, if everything was smooth and elegant. Google has a genuinely good idea that benefits users, and a common behavior that users do all the time, as Google's stats have shown. But something else. They need to finish the basics first before they can get away with that. So at the end of the day, it'll be better next year.
I think we're just coming at this from slightly different angles. I don't care whether they do something that's new and thoughtful.
Yeah.
Honestly, I really don't. I mean, I think that what they've done is, yeah, I completely agree that it is kind of new and interesting, but I think it's bad.
Yeah.
So I guess they get credit for not just straight copying Apple, but I think if they would, even if they just pulled the trigger and just decided to straight up just mandate that Android apps have to work the same way that iOS apps do, and that the navigation paradigms were literally just a one-for-one copy, I think that would be better than what we have today. And so I'm just looking at it from the perspective of all the phones I use and I have used, which span a wide variety in the last 5 years of doing this full time, which navigation system of everything feels the most natural to me and feels the most intuitive. And I think that given that we live in a buttonless world, so that gets rid of, you know, leaving a single home button, hardware home button like an old iPhone, and that gets rid of, you know, lots of other physical button based UI paradigms. Given that we're just in a screen based world, I think that the best of them before the pill was the old traditional three button Android navigation system. I think the pill was worse in theory, but fine in actual application. And I think that Apple mastered the transition of going from old style to new style. And I think the way they did the new one is ideal. And so I don't know. The question now is this is my question, just theoretic. Where do you think we're going from here? Do you think that, I mean, obviously Google is all in on this fully gestural. Yeah. I don't see Google going back to the pill or to the old three button system. I think Google is all in. The question is, are we going to see this continue to get closer to a copy of the iOS navigation system next year, i.e. is Google going to start putting in place some foundational or structural changes that force the system to work less and less dependent on a back button and give developers design guidelines that discourage them from doing things, certain things that would get in the way of that. So I don't know. Is that what you think is going to happen next year? Do you think we're just going to get closer and closer to Apple's system and Google's just inching their way and they just don't want to make it too harsh? Or do you think that Google's going to sit in this weird in between? Have we arrived? Is this Google's gesture for the next gesture based navigation system for Android for the next 10 years?
I doubt. No, with the material theme, with material theming, apps are going to lose that navigation role. That is one.
Yep.
One specific area that they can address. Yep. But I'm not too sure about the idea of like changing the back behavior. That would be a much more fundamental thing.
Yep.
That I'm not sure if Google is ready to make, can make, or wants to make. Really.
If you're asking me, which I know you're not, my opinion is that Google is setting the foundation to make the way navigation and UX works on Android literally a carbon copy of the way it works on an iPhone for multiple reasons. I mean, there are multiple incentives to do that. One, I think it's objectively good. Two, I think that Google benefits greatly. And obviously third-party OEM can do whatever the heck they want, you know? Mm-hmm. But for Google, let's say we're just thinking about the Pixel. I think Google benefits greatly from an iPhone user being able to pick up a Pixel and it works the exact same way. That's one less barrier to entry for converting iPhone users to Pixel users, which has obviously been at the forefront of Google's hopes and strategies with the Pixel line. Whether they've been successful with that is up for debate. But that's one big thing that I think they've wanted, is they wanted to appeal to the person who would normally be buying an iPhone. And I think that if those people can pick up a Pixel phone and the navigation works exactly the same or almost indistinguishable, which as of today with the full release of Android 10, it does not. I think that Google benefits greatly from an iPhone user feeling completely at home if they want to switch from an iPhone 11 to a Google Pixel 5. That's just my feeling on it.
Yeah, and time is always the answer in these things. It's how much polish Google gets to improve in the next year, and how much the shift in developers they can enforce. I guess I do have some slight concern about Google iterating the core way you use your phone.
Totally agree. It's a mess and should not have happened.
Two years, right?
We're going on three.
And I don't know how sustainable that is. If I were an OEM and Google wasn't enforcing that gesture navigation beyond my device, I would have stuck out and used three buttons for as long as I could.
Yeah, I think that Google totally botched this, and I think they know they did. I think that what they wanted to accomplish last year with the pill system was, I think they wanted to do it in 1 year, like Apple did. I think that Google wanted to just go straight from something, you know, the old paradigm to the new paradigm, and that just be the end of it. I just think they failed. I think they realized they failed. They knew they failed, and I think they're having to recover from that now. And I think we're just going to see them continue to slowly iterate on this until it's basically using your Pixel is identical to using your iPhone. I think it's a mess, and I think it's a mistake on their part. Anyways, that's enough about gesture navigation. All these opinions are, I guess, up for refinement and reconsideration in the future, on both of our ends.
Never-ending story.
Yes, especially with this gesture thing. This gesture thing has just been a conversation forever. Next on the Android 10 list is dark theme. So I feel like, in a way, there's actually a little bit of a parallel here between the way the gesture rollout has happened over the last few years and the way the dark theme rollout has happened over the last few years, which is to say it has been totally botched. And it seems like it's getting there, but it's not like the Android 10 release does not put this to bed yet.
No. No. Not even in Google's first party apps and services. Yeah.
And for those that don't know, this story goes all the way back to Android Lollipop. I think Android Lollipop was the first version that had hints found in the source code about some kind of dark mode. So this goes back like almost half a decade at this point.
Oh, gosh. And
Android 10, finally, they're putting, I mean, obviously dark theme or dark mode is on the actual release notes for Android 10. It's the second probably most important feature or tentpole, I guess, for this release. And it's closer, but like gestures, there are so many holes to poke in this. What are your major gripes? Do you have any major or minor gripes with dark theme right now in terms of the way it's implemented or inconsistencies or what?
I'm not going to blame Android the OS on this. I think I'm just going to blame the Google's usual problem of getting app developers, even their first party ones, to update their apps. I think it's fine. I think the dark theme as implemented today is what most people want and what most people expect. And I think it's going to be fine.
I think it is very sad that half of Android's half of Google's first party apps have not yet integrated with the first party system level setting. That's
what's new?
That's just absurd. That's absurd.
What like, do you expect?
I mean, it is what I expect, but it continues to be absurd in my opinion.
Yes, like, absolutely.
But why does the phone app respect the universal setting, but the messages app does not? There's no excuse for that. There's just not. I mean, these are the phone app and the SMS text messaging app are arguably the two most important functions of your phone.
It does respect it, though.
As far as I can tell, having been running this for...
It really should.
Well, I still have a three-dot menu that requires me to click enable dark mode in mine.
Oh, that's what you mean.
If I toggle the system level setting, it doesn't change the setting in the messages app.
Oh, that. Again, what do you expect?
I'm baffled.
Yeah.
And the Play Store doesn't, well, the Google, oh, so as of right now, if I toggle the system level setting, let's see. Well, let's just go through for funsies. Let's figure out which apps respect it. So I have it off and all my apps are just normal, bright, material theme as they are. Mm-hmm. And let's toggle dark theme in my quick settings. And okay, we got phone. That went dark. Messages. Still white. Play Store, still white. Chrome, that went dark, but it doesn't, the web level dark stuff is not a thing yet. Let's see, files went dark. Calculator went dark. Calendar went dark. Google Drive went dark.
Duo, it's just Gmail. It's
Gmail. It's bright. It's Gmail, Play Store, messages. I mean, it's not just anything. Maps, still white. You know, like, it's 50% of the apps.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. It's
straight up 50%. It's half and half. And that's just crazy. Like, they've had this entire beta cycle, and they all have material theme, and material theme at a structural level, material theme is made to make this as easy as possible. And Google's first party apps don't. It's got to be like one color hex value and an if then statement. Like if system level toggle is enabled, background hashtag 0000000. That's all you need, right? I'm obviously not exaggerating, but it's just crazy to me. And I think that's a fair critique.
It is. So. I'm not saying it's not. I guess I've just grown jaded with how things work, with how I expect, how I know things will end up working. So that is on me.
Oh, we should just expect that when Google announces a feature and launches it with the premier, with the world's most popular operating system, they launch a major feature release. This is the number two of all of its tentpole features.
Mm-hmm.
That half of their own apps.
Yep.
Don't even support the feature.
Basically.
Oh my gosh. Well,
yeah.
Google, you suck.
It can get better, which is the same.
No, it will. It will. I mean, all these apps it'll be resolved in the next month or two, probably. But then the question becomes third-party apps, which that's
that's not
what you want to go there. All hope is already lost on that.
Basically.
Anyways, that's the two main things: gesture navigation and dark theme. That's what most people notice. It's really, I mean, it's sad that, I mean, we're at this point where annual mobile operating system releases are just not as exciting as they used to be.
No, they're not.
So that's the two big tentpole features for Android 10. What else is there? There's the smart reply stuff, which, did you want to talk about that a little bit and maybe praise it a little bit so we can say something positive?
It's my favorite feature. I think it speaks to how it's very hard for Google to get app developers to update the app, to update stuff with features like smart reply, but now it's on the system level and it is fantastic. It does make you so lazy, though, when you're replying and you just pick the standard option. But that's here nor there.
That's like been my favorite thing
in Gmail.
Especially for our line of work in Gmail, responding to PR emails. Hey, would you like this embargo? And one of the Gmail smart reply, you know, chips says sure, and I just click it and click send.
Yeah,
even to Google itself, and they know, like they know what I'm doing. Google PR knows.
Let's see what else is there here.
There's some privacy things. That's boring. Some minor UI tweaks. So there's progress bars on music and the notification shade now. There's blurred lock screen for
which album
artwork on the lock screen, which I think looks worse.
Yeah,
it does. A revamped share sheet.
Which is, what people want is an underlying improvement to make the system faster, not a visual refresh. So yeah,
exactly.
That's next year.
Yeah, next year. That hurts to say that. Bunch of new emoji, some added features in digital well-being, always on display, gets some more details. Google Camera brings night sight to the forefront. Rotation.
Yeah, that's...
That's nice. Overall, it feels like a .1 release almost.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, like when Google started
buggy.
It's buggy. Yeah, when Google started switching to... When they stopped doing like... Android 4.1, Android 4.2. You know that was for marketing reasons entirely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this would definitely be, if Google was still doing that, this would be Android 9.3 or something like that. And it would have a new dessert name.
Yeah.
Remember back in the day when it was a .2 release and it got a new dessert name?
Yeah, that's bold stuff, Google. Old Google. It was messy, and I guess this is better to keep in your head, but it's not as true, let's say.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from Android 10 and talk about Pixel 4 a little bit. So Pixel 4 is coming next month, probably. we're waiting. It seems like, what day was the event invites sent out last year, September 6th?
Yes, so last year we got the invites to NYC, and... We're days away from it happening.
Yes, hopefully. So yeah, we're going to be invited to made by Google most likely in the next few days. One of the main things we're expecting to see there is Google Pixel 4, which we've been talking about on the show for a long time. And some interesting things happened this week. Let's start off with, I guess, the most recent thing, which is that our friends at XDA found code evidence in Android open source project. Someone and some engineer somewhere apparently accidentally referred to the Pixel 4 as the P19, presumably to stand for the 2019 Pixel, when they were talking about code changes relating to screen refresh rates. So it turns out that our report from, when was it? A month ago? That said that 90 hertz display was going to be one of the big headlining features for Pixel 4. Is now even more confirmed. So there's actual code that's been found that's shown that that's absolutely the case. So if you had any doubt in our reporting, that puts that to bed, in my opinion. So that's happening for sure. Another thing is that today there were two pretty major Pixel 4 leaks. So obviously this year has been far slower in terms of leaks, I think. I mean, so far, no Ukrainian bloggers have posted full unboxings, which, I don't know, there's still a month to go, so we could still, there could still very well be some crazy black market stuff going on. But not yet. And so even the smallest of leaks, I mean, it's really this weird dichotomy, right? Because it's like, in one sense, everything about the Pixel 4 is already leaked, right? If this were Apple we were talking about, this would be the most leaky season ever, right? Because Apple, you know, Apple's with the iPhone, it leaks, but not nearly to the degree. Even this year being so much slower than last year, the iPhone 11 has not leaked to the degree that the Pixel 4 has. So in one sense, we know everything about the Pixel 4 more than we would ever know about a lot of other phones. But it's just in comparison to last year, it feels like we don't know anything because we haven't seen what accessories are in the box and what the inside of the manual looks like and whether or not there are wired Pixel Buds for European countries and whether or not, you know, like these little details that we got last year in such depth over and over and over. It was fun. If you want to read a fun article, it's called Every Single Google Pixel 3 Leak. I wrote that last year and it has dates and everything. It's the whole story. And I don't think I'm gonna be able to write that this year because I just don't think there's enough. I did leak the full spec sheet basically. So Pixel 4, we know everything about it. 90 hertz display, Project Soli, we were first report that as well. It's gonna have face unlock, it's gonna have, you know, more RAM, it's gonna have the latest Snapdragon processor, it's gonna have hella bezels.
It's not that bad. It's much better than most.
Well, I know, but in comparison to the rest of the market at this point, it's so we know everything, but today we got a chance to look at even more stuff, which is just more little hands-on videos with real devices. And so we got another video. First, we got another video of the black model. I don't think it showed us anything new, did it?
So the Google, I'm thinking of the white one, but not really.
Yeah, so the black model we've seen in pictures, but I think most of the pictures of the real life model we've seen up to this point have been in cases.
Yeah.
This one is a completely nude. So this is the first time we've seen in the flesh, in real, like real photos or video of the black Google Pixel 4. I think XL, without a case. So go check that out. But the more interesting leak of the day was the white one. So this is the first we've seen of the white model.
Yes.
It apparently has an orange home button or lock button, I should say.
Yeah, which is, it's fine.
That matches the old Panda. I just realized that Alphabet Scoop exclusive, the old Panda was black and white with an orange home button, and this Pixel 4 is black on the front and white on the back with an orange home button. So maybe this actually is the true return of the Panda.
True return of the Panda. Yeah, it's orange. It's
Panda 2. Google Panda strikes back.
Google strikes back, indeed. So, but the other interesting thing we saw was there was a dog food version of the Google Camera app, and as Google wants,
as there always is.
And as Google wants to do, they changed things up again. So this year's change, apparently, is moving the mode switcher of night sight, of video, of portrait, underneath at the very bottom. So it's under the shutter button. And what immediately comes to mind is you're going to mess up the gestures to go home. So I don't know. We'll see how it works in practice, but I think it might end up conflicting with gestures when you're swiping to switch apps, because you also need to swipe to the tabs of different modes. So it's a curious little change, but apart from that, we haven't seen anything that suggests what the new camera features will be, which is still the big secret.
You know what's one thing that I'm curious about? This is a little bit of a sidebar, but last year when I was using the pill-based navigation on the Pixel 2, it felt even on the final release of Android 9, mm-hmm. it felt clunky. But then when I used it on the Pixel 3 at the event, it felt significantly better. And I don't know what the difference was.
More time, probably.
Yeah, just slightly more time, just slightly newer build of Android, I guess. So I'm curious to see if that happens again with the Pixel 4. Obviously, I think the gesture navigation on the final build of Android 10 on Pixel 3 right now is pretty buggy. Still swiping left and right between the apps and all that stuff. It still drop frame rates and some just random visual glitchiness. Maybe that'll all be ironed out for Pixel 4. Just more leaks. And we're probably going to have even more leaks in the coming weeks, but at least we have something to talk about. So that's good. Hopefully we'll see some Ukrainian bloggers and posting some full-on unboxing. We'll be able to get to see the retail packaging and the barcode and everything. Kyle Butch dropped in the comments. He asked price predictions. We haven't talked about this, really. What do you think we're going to see for prices on Pixel 4?
Okay. Do you think it's a more... Yes, it's obviously a more expensive phone than the Pixel 3. So, maybe another 100. So the Pixel 3 started at $799. $899? That's kind of pushing it, but...
I think it'll be the same as last year.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't think... What makes it more expensive? Soli sensor?
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just par for the course. Yeah, another camera.
More glass.
I mean, I don't think that the iPhone 11 is going to be, or the iPhone 11 Pro, whatever, ends up being on. I don't think it's going to be any more expensive. So there's some level of iteration and progress that tends to just be...
I think I'm factoring the fact that Google's hardware, how they do hardware, is slightly different in terms of scale, economies of scale, and that's such...
Another reason I think that it's going to be the same price is because I think that it's not as visually stunning as the $1,000 phones. And I think if they raise the price to $900 starting, I think, you know,
yeah, that's very,
it's
fair.
Like, it's too much in the same league as the Galaxy Note 10 or whatever. And it's just not
hardware wise. It's not that,
it's just not their hardware. It'll look absurd side by side from a visual standpoint. So I think that that's another reason that it'll stay in the reasonable sub 1,000 realm that it's been in.
You think it'll be cheaper though? Because do you think it'll be cheaper than $799? Because
I think it'll be the same price as the Pixel 3,
even in regards to like how there were so many crazy deals so fast after it launched.
Yeah, I think that'll probably happen again too.
Ooh. You don't think they learned something from that? Like,
sell phones, and I think that
was the consumer. There was genuine anger, and I think it was more than justified.
Yep. What? Because they raised the price?
Because they lowered it so quickly?
Oh, like, yeah.
I'm not against. You should absolutely lower your price, like if you need to. But a month, that's kind of, there is a price of being an early adopter. It is absolutely that, but some of those deals were pretty good and made early adopters feel pretty bad.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. I don't know if they're going to repeat it from a PR standpoint, but I think ultimately, I mean, it just so happens that the Black Friday, the shopping season happens a month or two after the event, and you know, I mean, Google's got to sell phones. They've got to try. I mean, I think part of the reason that they did that last year, because I think Pixel 3 vastly underperformed expectations.
Yeah.
And so I think they're just trying to like, Like, how do we get? Do we have to give them away? Just like make them free? Maybe people will buy them if they're free. I don't know. And that's basically what they did. They made them buy one get one free almost.
Yeah, BOGO. Everybody loves BOGO.
So yeah, so that's Pixel 4. Is there anything else on that? I mean, they hit the FCC, which is like what, 8 models of them hit the FCC, or six of them hit the FCC.
4 this time, I think.
Okay. Well, 4 this time, and we initially thought it might be 5G because of the band, the wireless.
It was so close to the millimeter wave band. Yeah,
but it turned out that it's most likely solely. No reason to think it's 5G, especially since 5G is still extremely, extremely niche.
I am happy that Google didn't get suckered into that by any of their carrier partners, like Apple. Yes. Presumably.
I think we'll see. I think 5G is going to go mainstream in a year.
Yeah.
Next year will be the year that every mainstream flagship is going to be 5G by default, I think. So, And I think that's going to be the big S on next year's iPhone. It'll be like, they need something to justify the S year.
Yeah, 5G.
I think that we'll see the end of this, like, like right now, the way it is that all these OEMs have all their like normal 4G phones, and then they sell a 5G phone in addition that costs more.
Yeah,
it's like for the super crazy early adopters, and I think that's going to end with the next cycle next year. I think all the mainstream phones are just going to have 5G. So, and that would be my opinion. We'll see how that shakes out. You think? I mean, if anything, it might be a year too soon.
Yeah, if anything. Again, it all comes down to reception.
It's going to happen eventually.
It is, absolutely.
So, anyways, let's close out the show and talk about two more little projects or topics that happened this week. First of all, the Android Auto like
fiasco
situation. So, okay. I'll give you the short TLDR history on this. At Google I/O, Google announced Assistant Driving Mode, which is what they think is going to be, well, what they want you to use as your main in the car, on your phone driving experience, basically. Before that, they had the Android Auto app on your phone, on which you could use on the phone. So the Android Auto app was doing double time and was working as both the companion app to run Android Auto on your in-car infotainment system, but also as an actual app to use on your phone. Google Assistant Driving Mode was announced at I/O. We immediately confirmed with the product manager of that the old Android Auto on the phone. And I've realized that my headline was a bit confusing. I called it the car app experience, which I'm realizing is like not super great at conveying the idea of the one on the phone screen. Google uses the Android Auto on phone screen,
which is
also very clunky. So there's really no easy way to explain this. No. And it's really hard to differentiate. But so that's what Google told us. Google told us, and then PR confirmed to us that, yes, the old Android on the phone experience was going away and being replaced by
driving mode,
and that at some point in the future, as Google always does, that they would be alerting users and telling them, hey, you should go use assistant driving mode because this is going to be deprecated. Well, some point between Google I/O in 2019 and today, Google decided that they need a little bit of a stopgap solution, which that's literally what they called it when they talked to The Verge about it yesterday or today. And basically what that is they're going to break out. So now that Android Auto is built into the operating system, they're going to break out the Android Auto.
I just think it's an icon, personally.
Okay. Well, they're going to break out the Android Auto app experience, phone experience, into a separate app that will be available on the Play Store. Yes, to us it's an app icon, but to anyone else, they don't understand that it's just a redirect to a different whatever.
So that Google Lens.
Yes. So, and Google Podcasts and plenty of others. So yes. They're now decided that if you want to keep using the old Android Auto experience, you're not you just can. Going to be stuck, because we've realized, or Google realized sometime between Google I/O and now, that it seems like Android Assistant Driving Mode is going to take a little bit longer than they thought. So I think ideally they would have been pushing people over by now, but I think that since it's taking so long, they're now
which is
this alternative.
Kind of odd, because Google's actively working on Assistant Driving Mode. The last we saw, they're working on the dark theme, the driving mode in the Google app. Right. But summer is 2-3 weeks away, and even if it wouldn't be fully rolled out within 3 weeks, even if they announced it today. So the stopgap measure.
Right, and as you, or I think Kyle and Dylan, have been digging in YouTube and the Android Auto app, they literally are preparing the strings to point people and tell them, hey, don't use this anymore, use Assistant Driving Mode. That's coming at some point in the next few releases, probably. So keep an eye out for that. That's all you need to know about that, really, is that Google's decided that they just need the stopgap measure for now. And I speculated in my comment piece yesterday, I said, this is a rare consolation from Google to give us something like this whenever they're killing a feature. And it turns out that Google did confirm directly to The Verge that they are going to kill this Android Auto app. So yes, you should probably, if you can, not use it at all and just wait and just use the Assistant Driving Mode. That's probably the ideal situation, because if you want to use Android Auto on phone screen, Android Auto on phone screen, it's going to be killed in sooner rather than later. So it literally is a stopgap. Just like Google Plus for G Suite users is a stopgap before that gets killed, which it will almost certainly get killed.
To Google Currents? Yes, it's going to be called Currents, which is a throwback name.
Indeed. So that's Android Auto. Finally, for the week, I want to talk about Jacquard. So Jacquard, it is Google ATAP's good old fabric-based touch-sensitive technology thing.
Close enough. Exactly.
That is as succinct as I can be. And it's been a thing for a while, but this week, It's back for round two. It's back.
Yes. So 2 years ago this month, the Revise Trucker Jacket went on sale at, I think, $400 as the very first piece of clothing that had Jacquard. And within those 2 years, they kept selling it. You can get it at the Google merchandise store in Mountain View. Anybody can buy it right now and only wash it 10 times. And updates have been kind of slow. I think the last update was like a find my phone feature at the very end of last year. But updates aside, there's a new form factor in this Saint Laurent, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, backpack. It's basically just a luxury backpack. And on the left shoulder is a very large Jacquard target that you can swipe, tap, double tap, and cover the entire thing with your hand. And it does all the same gestures as a jacket. There's nothing new there. It's fundamentally the same technology, but it's now on a $900 luxury backpack.
Yep. And that's interesting. It's interesting because it's I think it's a step forward and a step back in a way. And I wrote about this. If you want to go read my full piece, if you want to be one of only 100 people that have read it so far, apparently no one cares about Jacquard but me, you can go check out that piece. It's over on 9to5google.com, and it's one of the featured articles right now if you're listening live. So, but I'll explain to you the gist of what I think about that, and that is that it is a step forward in one way and a step back in another. One of the fundamental problems, I don't want to call it a problem because I think it was partly intended, is that the Levi's jacket was for a very specific person. It was for someone who cares about having the latest technology, cares about having technology built into their clothing, which that already is a very, very, very small percentage of the population. Someone who has even heard of this, which is, I mean, a vast majority of people who have seen my jacket have been like, I've never heard of that. So there's not any marketing push around this. In the case of the Levi's trucker, it was also someone who rides a bike in the city. And I mean, I could keep on going.
Yeah.
It is the most specific built product that Google has ever made in partnership with another company, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I just happen to be, I think, a lot of those things. And so I really, really liked the Levi's trucker jacket, but I have to come to terms with the reality that it is not for hardly anyone. It's really not for most people.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things about Jacquard is that so far what we've seen is it's been in built into products that are for just a very few small audience.
It's just so odd.
Odd, but also to be expected, given that the technology is so young, and you know it's still early days. I would say it's only been even viable. I mean, how many times did the Jacquard jacket get delayed because of, I'm presuming, just struggles making it even
the like, weaving
durable and you know reliable enough to be a consumer product, and perfecting the whole Jacquard tag thing, which I think that ended up being a lot more bulky than.
Yeah.
And you know, like it's just early technology still. So but it's been 2 years since then. And so you would think that the next step would be maybe putting it on something that would be obviously the first version was a learning experience, maybe putting it on something that more people could buy. But it seems like that's not the case. It seems like the accessibility and the number of people who will be able to buy it and the number of people who would want to buy it with this new backpack is actually going to be smaller. Because this backpack is going to cost $900 or $1,000 or even more dollars. And it's also a very specific design style for a very specific kind of person. It's not like a JanSport backpack that anyone can wear. It's very niche, even more niche than the Levi's trucker jacket, I think. But I think it is a better implementation in terms of form factor for a few reasons. And I outlined these in the piece is that the jacket had some problems in that, you know, it's very region and climate specific. So anyone who lives in a place that it doesn't get under 70 degrees the whole year, which is all of Florida and most of Texas, all of New Mexico and Arizona, unless you live in high elevation, you know, it's like, lots of places in the United States owning a jacket at all, like people don't even have jackets in their closet because they literally never need them. And so a lot of people were just immediately not able to get that product in the just right out the gate. That's one thing that is different with the backpack, because the backpack, for instance, is not climate specific. You can wear a backpack in the winter or the spring. It doesn't matter if you live in a cold climate or a warm climate. It's a backpack, right? Another thing is the fashion aspect too, right? Like, who wears the same jacket every day? And if you're going to spend three times premium pricing to get a little Jacquard tag on your jacket and make your jacket smart, wouldn't you want to wear it every day so you can make it part of your life and actually use it? And if you're not, then what's the point? Like, You really have to wear it every single day for it to make sense, I think. And who wears the same jacket? I mean, one thing I realized with it is like, I mean, I have to say that a jean jacket is probably more so kind of a constant reworn, you know, piece of clothing than most. So I will give it that. But still, like, I might wear that jacket outside if it's 50. What if it's 60? I'm going to wear something lighter. I'm not going to wear something as heavy as that Levi's jacket, right? So suddenly the jacket is becoming just a jacket and not really part of my life and not something that's actually making my life easier when I'm out riding my bike or whatever, because I'm wearing my clothing and my clothing's being adapted to whatever the environment is that day and climate is that day. And the jacket just might not be suitable. Anyways, long story short, the backpack is not that way. The backpack is functional any time of the day, any time of the year, and people wear the same backpack for 3, 4, 5 years on end, because, you know, especially if you're spending $1,000 on a backpack, you know, you're gonna use it. So all that to say, I think in practicality it's actually better. It makes more sense to have Jacquard on a backpack than on a jacket. as sure. very broad categories, especially for students. You know, it that makes total sense. That means 3/4 of the year you're wearing that backpack to school every single day, and you've got that functionality sitting on your shoulder. And you don't have to wear the same jacket if you want Jacquard. You can wear anything you want to wear and just wear the backpack. So I think the backpack makes way more sense. It's just that Google decided this time to pick a very, very specific backpack that no one is going to buy. I mean, the only people that are going to buy this backpack are people that are going into, I'll just say YSL because I don't know how to pronounce the name of this brand, going into their retail store, and they're looking at, they come into the retail store and they tell the salesperson, "Hi, yes, I'm interested in a $1,000 backpack today." And the salesperson will be like, "Okay, let me show you what we have. We have this dumb backpack that's $900, this dumb backpack that's $1,000, this dumb backpack that's $1,100, and this smart backpack that's $1,300. Now, which one would you like?" And the person is like, "I would like the smart backpack." "Oh, how is it smart?" "Oh, because it has Google Jacquard technology."
Here's what it can do.
So, long story short, what I want is a backpack that anyone could buy that has Jacquard on it and that costs $50 more than the regular one.
Yeah.
And I think that would make sense. Google might actually be able to learn something if they did that, because how many people are truly going to buy this backpack? It's got to be less than, I mean, in the first year, how many sales do you think they're going to have? Less than 5,000, right?
Yeah, less than 5,000.
Maybe less than 1,000. Maybe less than 500.
So let me get my cynical cap on. Yeah.
Go.
Question, let's put this on ATAP. Why does ATAP keep partnering with these high fashion, high brands?
Well, I mean, I think a big part of it might just be whether or not they're able to produce the Jacquard fabric in high volumes.
So it's okay. So that's
like it might be a supply chain production.
Supply chain issues. Right. I think the weaves are in Japan, so that could be that. That's a very good reason. Quality control, but I guess
fiscally responsible Google.
They are definitely making something back on the $1,000 backpack. They're making money off that. They're not losing money, so to speak. Hopefully, right. They're not losing money on the $1,000. But another thing, I don't know if they're kind of hiding. They're hiding this technology. That in a way that we didn't see with Sori, because Sori is just coming to market. It's Jacquard is being hidden behind.
Yeah, it's very different.
Higher fashion in higher cost. That jacket compared to like the jackets, you can get like that jacket for like $100. Without Jacquard technology, that the price premium is crazy if you really, really think about it. So, and for the second generation, they went even higher upstream. Instead of making a cheaper jacket, which is a reasonable second generation of Jacquard, they went into an entire other form factor. And I don't know what their focus is, because when they talk about Jacquard, it's this revolutionary new input method, and yeah. Like the clothing is universal. There's a universality to that, which I think they alluded to in their previous talks about this Jacquard technology. So that's the message they're saying, and the reality is so much different in these products. So are they learning from user experience? What are they getting from doing this project? And why hasn't it been killed yet is, I guess, my end question. It's an interesting technology. Yeah, it might be promising.
I think it's probably analogous to the Android Wear team playing with Soli on that watch that was demoed at Google I.O. 3 years ago. You know, it's like they're experimenting. I think this is really just learning, because I think Google has a past of finding a technology that seems exciting in concept, putting its entire weight behind it. I mean, I'm thinking of Google Glass right now, putting its entire weight behind it, and then it being completely ridiculed and mocked by popular culture. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think Google sees it as the alternative is we put Jacquard on every little jacket and every little backpack at Walmart, and everyone thinks it's a dumb gimmick, you know?
Yeah.
So we could go an expensive dumb gimmick that never actually goes anywhere and never proves itself as anything that's
sure, okay,
worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so it's smarter and wiser to just put it, drop it here, drop it there, put it on this little product here, this little product there, and just learn. And if it gets to the point where it's very clear that we can see data and significant reasoning that shows that it has a potential in a real consumer product, then you see exactly what happened with Soli and Pixel 4, where Google was like able to see, okay, Soli, we've been experimenting, we've been playing with it for like 7 years, 8 years. We've tried it here, we've tried it there, we've tried it on smartwatches, we tried it on smart speakers, we tried it on. And eventually they came to a conclusion of, okay, we can put it in this product and it will genuinely bring a true benefit. And it may not be revolutionary. It may not be what they've been preaching as that Jacquard is this revolutionary, crazy, cool technology, which you have to notice. Google ATAP has toned down a lot over the last
few years. Oh, yes, they have.
They've toned down as a group, not just about Jacquard, but as a group as a whole. Yeah, and so I think that's smart. I think it's an organization-wide shift where they're being more conservative. And whenever they do find something that makes a lot of sense, they're going to go all in. It's an all or nothing situation. And that's,
so I guess my response
Jacquard is still in the nothing stage.
I guess my response to that is, what actual data are they getting out of a $400 jacket, out of a $900 jacket? Are they getting data from real people, from real consumers who are actually going to buy the stuff? Or have they picked a very select bubble that
is you want to know what data I think they got on the jacket?
What did they get?
I think they got people didn't use it.
Yeah.
If I were completely honest, I think what they got on the jacket, I mean, they probably sold hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not thousands, maybe thousands, single-digit thousands. I don't know. Definitely hundreds. They sold hundreds of them, and I bet the data would show, based on usage of the Jacquard app, that I'm just purely speculating here. I would guess that 75% of people that bought that jacket
forgot it,
used it for a month, and then it just tapered off into nothing, and it became just a jacket in their closet. I would bet that is what it looked like. That's a significant data point. That tells you, okay, if we had put this on a $60 consumer jacket and tried to use it as a selling point to sell a premium version of a $60 jacket that maybe the masses would have bought, how would that have played out?
No, I think it would have been different because price is the greatest factor here.
I don't think so. I think whether or not it's a... whether or not it's a good product that makes people's lives better. If it doesn't work, so this is what I think. In Jacquard, on the jacket, it was for a very specific use case. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Riding your bike around the city with your headphones on. You know, that's a very specific, of all the different lifestyles that people live in the world, that one should be one where the Jacquard jacket actually makes your life easier. Because you can control your music while you're riding your bike at night in a city without having to fiddle with controls. That's a real reason to have Jacquard. And if even those people usage tapered off, then what does that say about everyone else? And that don't have those very niche specific use cases in which in an ideal world, it would absolutely make sense to have a Jacquard jacket. So I think that's what they're doing. I think they tried the jacket. I would guess they've learned that in that case, this probably doesn't have much potential as a prime time consumer product, even if it was priced low enough to where everyone could buy it. I think it would go the way of Google Glass, where people realize, this doesn't actually improve my life. There's no real reason for me to want this or to need it because I bought it and now I don't use it anymore. You know?
Yeah, yeah,
maybe the backpack will be a different story, but I think they're going to have enough people buy the backpack to where they're going to be able to learn from a completely different data set.
Yeah, and I guess we can be, even then, $900 backpack, that's a big limiting factor, as we said at the top. But I think Google of all companies should know that scale works, and when you flood your services onto an audience, I think you can get interesting adoption, you can get interesting word of mouth, you can get interesting usage.
Yeah. I mean, one thing you're absolutely right about is that if they made this available to everyone, then they would, some people would find ways, right? Like you don't know the ways in which people are going to use your technology until you put it out there. And that, I mean, that's one of the things that I've heard so many times from product managers in all sectors of technology is they've said, you know, yeah, we built this app and then we put it out in the world and people used it completely differently than we could have ever imagined. And so, yeah, I mean, there is some truth to that, where if Google got, you know, 3 million people out there using Jacquard or having Jacquard at their disposal, then maybe there would be use cases that would emerge that Google itself can't think about or would never consider. So that's the other side of the argument, I guess. Anyways, I think this was a good show. Fun little rant on Jacquard. We will have more in the future. It's ramping up. So this fall is going to be exciting. We have Google's Made by Google event coming up next month. Lots of stuff expected. Thanks for watching the show, guys. Thanks everyone for tuning in. You can tune in Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday or Thursday or whatever. We're going to figure out a schedule, I promise. And publish that day in the afternoon, typically. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms and apps, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play. And you can also listen directly over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks, Abra, for joining me. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Later.